Here at Renew Energy Partners, climate change is very important to us, and so is beer. In every episode of the Green Beers podcast, we taste a beer together. We talk about the brewery and their sustainability practices. And then we talk about a topic relating to our work in decarbonizing buildings and mitigating climate change. Welcome to Green Beers. My name is Mike Savage, and I'm here with
Charlie Lauren,
Nathan Montgomery,
and Alexandra Carroll.
Wonderful. So this is our best episode yet. I don't know if you guys knew this, but this is going to be the best one. Every episode gets better and better, and this is we're going to kick things off well here in 2023. We are drinking Allagash White from the Great Brewers. It's Allagash Brewery. I mean, it's right there in the name. So I'm going to go for it.
In Maine, for those of you who are widely distributed across the country.
International listeners,
yes.
Right?
I mean, international listeners may not know that the Allagash River is in Maine.
Yes, of course.
But you might. Our listeners are very smart, so you might all know
that's
that.
That's true. We don't want to underestimate
and rivers. My pour was really bad. I mean,
I have my Allagash open. Alexandra's got her mug.
I do.
Mike,
I think we all went mugs this time. Here.
Mike, you did go mug. Wow. I thought you were going can. I was fully expecting can.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, this new year, new me, I guess, you know,
I will say before we get started, we heard from a longtime listener, who has suggested that we need t-shirts that, incorporate the Mike Savage crushability rating. So that's under advisement.
Yeah. We got to get our brand material out there. I don't want to give away, the entire podcast, but I will say this is going to rank highly.
I was just going to say, I almost jumped into a glowing review and then I realized we do it at the end, but.
Nice first pour, nice first sip. I'll leave it at that much. But
it's interesting about the new format, because if we end up with a beer we really don't like, I suppose you don't have to drink it, right? But you're stuck with it for the whole podcast.
Fair enough. Yeah. There's only been one or two, disasters. I guess so far.
I think
so.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all good. Our rankings pretty generally strong. At least we've chosen well, I think. In the history of the Green Beers podcast, there seems you've chosen well enough that you're not stuck with you at least got a decent beer.
Indeed.
And speaking of choosing well, Alexandra has chosen to work with Renew Energy Partners, and we are very glad to have her as a business development lead hailing out of my home state of Vermont. Alexandra, what were you doing before you joined Renew back in the fall?
Sure, yeah. So prior to making the great choice to work with Renew, I was working in manufacturing for a sustainable startup that was serving the construction space, which is largely my background. So.
Wonderful. You guys want to go a quick round robin on questions with Alexandra here?
Yeah. Well, Alexandra, welcome to Renew. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
You have indeed hit the ground running, and we're excited for 2023 as a team. As you said, you came from a startup that did that was in the clean tech space, but love to hear a little bit more about your motivation for joining Renew and working in our sector.
Yeah, I think, I've had a pretty longstanding demonstrated interest, if you will, in sustainability and I had a minor in sustainability from my alma mater, UNC Chapel Hill. And I was kind of able to see in the early stages of my career, sort of the project management side of construction and manufacturing. And toward the end of my last stint, a little bit more of the finance side of things. So I think that was a major motivator and having me join Renew. I think the project finance model that we work with is pretty exciting. And I think it's one of the bigger levers, if you will, for really achieving decarbonization on a commercial and industrial level. It's a big undertaking, and it's going to require some pretty sharp partners who know exactly how to lever funds in the right way. And so that's largely what draws me here.
Great.
Fantastic. Alexandra, I guess I'll just ask you a question about your background. You're from, correct me if I'm wrong, from Baltimore, Maryland?
I am, yes.
All right. So just, yeah. It's a place I've always wanted to go but never been. Could you tell me one of your favorite things about Baltimore?
I feel like, you know, we're drinking beer, so it's pretty topical. I love the Orioles. I grew up going to a lot of those games at Camden Yards.
Yep.
And they've got a lot of, you know, characters, I guess you could call them, that run up and down the stadium and get you peanuts and beer or what have you. So, you know, the sports scene is definitely a big draw, but I love my O's.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's great. And I don't remember if we've discussed this, Alexandra, but I lived in Baltimore in high school, and we used to go. I worked on a grounds crew in the summer, and we would finish work and then head over to the old Memorial Stadium before they even built Camden Yards. That's how far back I go. But it is a great baseball town and a great thing to do on a summer night, whether it's Memorial Stadium or Camden Yards. Camden Yards is a great baseball stadium because it's right downtown.
It is, very much.
And I think the Sox travel pretty well there. My understanding is that you can get tickets pretty easily to that one.
There's that as well.
Well, in fact, when the Red Sox were sold out for whatever number of years it was, people would go down there and there'd be more Red Sox fans than Orioles fans, which I think was supremely annoying to my friends from Baltimore. And Alexander, what was your first – I'm jumping ahead of Mike here, but I can't help myself.
Sure.
What was your first – do you remember your first beer?
I think I do. I kind of got these questions ahead of time. I believe it was Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Okay, nice.
So good old PBR.
I think we've had someone else who started it. Was it you, Nate? With the people? No, you were.
Shane might have.
Shane was PBR.
Shane or Charlie T. I can't remember.
Okay, yeah.
Good old Milwaukee beer. You know?
Yeah. My first beer was Natty Bo. Alexander.
Yeah. There you go.
Right.
You would think that would have been my first.
Well, that's
year,
why I asked. Yeah. It's like the PBR of Baltimore, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I think at some point PBR might have been canned in Baltimore or something kind of strange like that. So I'm sure there's a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you're up.
Well, I had my question lined up, so I'm just Alexandra, what is your favorite ballpark snack?
I've got to say the Barcelona peanuts in the shell. Baseball games are pretty long, and I try to stay for as long as I can. So it's a good way to pass the time. You know, nothing too heavy, nothing too serious.
So is Barcelona a brand, or is that the definition of a peanut in the shell?
It's a brand. Yeah. It's a brand, and they've got a little peanut mascot on them.
Right.
I don't know where else they serve them. They might still only serve them at Camden Yards.
Well,
I'm not sure.
I eat them at Fenway too. And it's true. The only time I ever eat them out of the shell is when I'm at a baseball game. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like it's either I was expecting, like, you know, for me, it's like, they got the giant pretzels and then they have like those foot long hot dogs or ballpark franks, you know.
Ballpark franks. Yeah. Yeah. Not a big hot dog person. Yeah.
No. I was probably going to judge you if you were.
Well, I also think, by the way, those only taste good at the baseball game, maybe because you're distracted.
I think that's it. Yeah. Same reason why I think it's a good idea to eat a bag of peanuts.
My favorite beer and ballpark story, and we're way off topic here, but I used to go to the game 4 or 5 games a year with these same 3 guys. And our seats were in Fenway under the overhang. For those of you from Boston, there's an overhang in the upper deck. We were on the lower deck, but what that meant is that no foul ball ever came to our seats. And we must have been to, I'm telling you, it's 200 games in those seats because we had them for 20 years. And about 2/3 of the way through that run, in some mathematical impossibility, a foul ball came under the seats straight at us. And one of my buddies had just finished his beer and used his beer cup to catch the ball.
There you go.
Impressive.
Timing was perfect.
I guess I'll follow up with the one last personal question. All right. Okay. You like eating the peanuts at the ball games. What beer are you drinking? What's your favorite? It's a beer-focused podcast, so we got to ask what your favorite beer is.
Yeah, I think to Charlie's point earlier, when in Rome, right, you got to go with the Natty Bo. So definitely, what I'm drinking at Camden Yards.
Nice.
So. There you go. Love it.
And outside of Camden Yards, what's your favorite favorite beer if you had to go to?
Yeah, my favorite beer, I feel bad. I feel like I should pick a, Vermont or Burlington beer, but it's, I like the Silver Moon Brewing Company, and I think they're out of Oregon. And their Flagstaff IPA, the IPA 97, that's kind of my go-to. When I can find it, I'm picking that every time.
Wow. Okay. That is, I'm intrigued. I've never had.
Yeah,
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, that's the first
follow. Follow ups are welcome here. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to source that for a future podcast or team.
Yeah,
team
I would
gathering.
Say it's good for people who think they've kind of seen it all with an IPA. It's not fruity or experimental. Just a kind of good old fashioned IPA.
Mike, can I steal your favorite question? Just because I've decided I'd love to hear everybody's answer to this one.
Yeah.
So, Alexandra, if you could have a beer with any human who's existed, living or historical, who would it be?
Oh, I know. And Nathan warned me about this question. And you would think I had a good answer here. I don't know. That's a tough one. Well, let me say this. What do people normally say? Are we going with historical figures normally?
Well,
or?
Nathan.
It's all up in the air. I said Nina Simone.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then we had a talk about who Nina Simone is, which is good.
Okay.
And Charlie T said
Tiger Woods. Yeah.
So, I think it's pretty much all over the map.
It's all over the map. Yeah. Well,
could be your cousin, what?
Right. that's hard. I mean, I feel like maybe we stick with the sports motif here and I'll go with Babe Ruth.
Nice.
Born in Baltimore. Great, great baseball player.
Yeah.
Good drinker.
I was going to say, be a great guy to have a beer with.
Just one beer.
Yeah, Alexandra, one beer only.
Just one. Yeah. There we go.
Great answer.
Yeah, that's we were working through the questions on what should we ask and the first one Nathan went first a couple weeks back or a couple months back and I asked him I think the question was what's your favorite Nathan
of all time.
Yeah.
What were some of the responses?
I just had said Nathan Hale because that's like the one guy in history that I ever learned about whose name was Nathan, and he died fighting for the revolution. So he stuck to his moral, like seemed to be a good guy. I always just thought it was a shame that they killed him, but that's the only Nathan in history that I learned about. They was put to death. So, but
strong answer for sure.
Yeah.
So I just had watched. an HBO show, that Nathan Fielder guy, that comedian. I was like, maybe he'll go with him. And that was the only other Nathan I could
think of. That would be my only, yeah, that's the only other Nathan I know of. He's a pretty funny guy, so.
Well, we'll save that question, Alexandra.
Okay.
For
your second visit.
There's not... when we break out that that 97 IPA, so just
I'll head up more Wikipedia to find more Nathans in the meantime.
Perfect.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask Alexandra who her favorite Alexandra was, but this is better. We're going to ask everybody who's your favorite Nathan, because there's only one Nathan anyone can think of.
Three Nathans, yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot, you know?
That would really confuse
that's much
people.
Better.
I love it.
They sing about Nathan Detroit and Guys and Dolls. Like, all right. You know, he's fake. So
John Lulich, who's just joined us as VP for asset management, this will guarantee that we'll have to beg him to come on the podcast if he's worried. Perfect. About the Nathan question.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. All right. Well, into our topic of the day here, which is resiliency and microgrids. And Renew, we've been funding microgrids for over 5 years now in the form of cogeneration plus energy storage, looking at distributed generation across the board, and all that's really core to our mission. Even though some of these projects use natural gas, we do create carbon reduction from day one. And we're providing a very valuable service in that, climate change is happening a lot faster than anybody, I think, would hope. And, you know, we're seeing these climate events this past week we had monsoons in California, we had a wild drought, we had wildfires, we had an ice storm in Texas, we had a crazy polar vortex. I mean, all these things cause drastic changes to our daily lives, but more importantly, the grid isn't really built to support, right? We have these big power generating systems, and they deliver power through miles and miles of poles that are all subject to wind and ice and fire. And what we can do to solve that is put power where it's used and locally source it, and hopefully do that in a sustainable way. And so I'm very bullish on our work in developing and owning and operating microgrids for key at-risk places like hospitals and healthcare systems and institutions where we can provide not only lower cost, more sustainable energy, but that resilience factor. So I think opening up for conversation today about, you know, where we see the future of resilience and microgrid as, we're investing a lot of time and resources into that right now.
Well, I mean, just to kick it off, I mean, it's resiliency in construction, right? In the construction of buildings, building resilient buildings essentially just has to be the norm at this point. I mean, you mentioned a few of the most recent natural disasters, right? I mean, when I was heading out flying to Denver for Christmas to see my family, just made it out. We were lucky in terms of our flight, but there, you know, East Boston was flooding. I mean, Lynn was flooding. This is, you know, in Massachusetts here. And so it's happening now. And, buildings and homes are at risk now, you know, for various reasons all across the country and the globe.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Well, I was just going to say, in that same storm, we have a project for a manufacturer who, when our system is unfortunately, we weren't fully operational. We are now, or will be in a month or so, actually. But when we're up, when that kind of a storm hits, they will ride through and continue to operate. And in fact, just luck of the draw, we weren't, our construction timetable wasn't done, and they went down for a day. But in the future, over the next 20 years of our project, that'll never happen again. And that's worth, you know, that's worth a lot of money to them, but it's also, you know, part of a more sustainable future and for our peoples, for jobs, for the economy, and for safety. When you translate that to the multifamily setting, you know, the ability to ride out these events is part of people being safe. Alexander, you're sort of point on some of our microgrid development. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on it, Charlie, but there's a operational efficiency, if you will, that I think is coming into play. Of course, you have, you know, multifamily or healthcare, more, you know, serious operations, but there's also kind of entertainment and recreation, if you will. And there's some spots that have multi-million-dollar operations that exist in the space, and licensing agreements and distribution agreements, and the show must go on, right? So I think for some areas in entertainment or you know, sports, it's kind of a way to ensure minimal disruptions to a pretty high revenue product. So it, you know, of course there's necessity, and then there's also shorter of convenience, if you will.
Right.
And it all comes into play.
Yep. So across a number of industries and settings, resilience has is critical.
Certainly.
Yep.
And the challenge in terms of, you know, funding projects like this is the value of resiliency. In certain situations, right, we've seen that manufacturers can put a dollar, right, to, well, if we're down for one day, that's going to lead to an X amount in revenue loss. But for, and you know, obviously it's, you know, that value of resiliency increases in critical life situations like hospitals and alike. But, you know, when you get to the rest of the world where, you know, it'd be a nice to have, but how do you say, well, for multifamily, what's the value of having ride through capability? Unfortunately, there's no right dollar value put to it. It's all qualitative. And that's a challenge, right? I mean, hopefully there's ways for us to create that, demonstrate that through insurance. But at the end of the day, you know, we're kind of constrained by trying to produce a product that reduces their operating expenses while hitting resiliency and doing so in a way that uses sustainable energy. And that's a Venn diagram where it's pretty hard right now to find that. But luckily or unluckily for some, it's like it is getting easier because energy costs are increasing, and this Inflation Reduction Act added significant incentives as well for us to get that done. So I think we're going to have more opportunities, and I'm definitely excited about the work that we'll be able to do because of these changes.
That's a good, I mean, good to, you have to look at some of this with some sort of optimism, because it's, you know, not that can be easily move over to pessimism, I think, in terms of just like the climate crisis in general. You know, thinking about again that the flooding I was talking about earlier, but in terms of a statistic I was hearing on the radio, I think just today, that that by 2100, half of mountain glaciers will be melted, and that is the best case scenario. Like, that's just, those are the facts, like, coming out, you know, and those are the things that pop, you know, notifications that pop up on our phones all the time, and it's disheartening, right? But we have to, at least, you know, something that I have to keep reminding myself, and I think, you know, Mike, again, I think it's a good perspective, is to think about the positive work we can do, you know, while we're here, that Renew can do, that we can all do together, with our partners and beyond. Hopefully, you know, we want other people to be doing this as well outside of us, to, you know, reduce carbon and to make buildings more efficient and more resilient, and, you know, actually be active in the process of
making a difference,
you know, at least slowing the process of climate change and preparing ourselves for what's to come, and yeah, keeping people safe.
Yeah, and in terms of sort of signs of change or reasons for optimism, there's a project that Alexandra's at point on now with a hospital involving battery storage, which would combine resilience with carbon emissions reductions. We're also looking at geothermal in hospitals. And if you look at those projects a year ago, you don't have the Inflation Reduction Act tax credit applicable at 30% to those two technologies. You don't have in Massachusetts some additional revenue streams from transmission resilience. And so, you know, in a year, projects that would have been hard to get a customer to accept, because as Mike, as you said, a hospital, in fact, it's critical to have resilience, and yet there's still dollars and cents on the table. A year ago, it's hard to show them savings. This year, it's a lot easier to show them some actual cash on the barrelhead. We pay for it. We operate it. You save money and get resilience and carbon emissions reduction. So, you know, the world is changing and these projects are becoming more investable. And Alexander, what that, I guess, you know, we're in early days talking to the customer about that project, but mm-hmm. It does look like one that could be promising.
It does. And I think also, you know, we've talked about some of the different value propositions of resiliency, but I think there's a, you know, certainly the policy landscape has changed, as you mentioned, but the sort of, you know, equipment supply and manufacturing landscape has changed as well. You know, with COVID, we've had to really adapt, I guess, to the supply chain crunch. And I think there's some interesting players in North America who are bringing some manufacturing capabilities a little bit closer to the project sites, which are only going to, I think, strengthen, you know, the leverage that resiliency can provide for some of these projects, which is also, I think, pretty exciting.
That's such a great point. It is. It's so cool. The idea that some of the core, if not all of the, most of the core equipment for batteries and other key technologies are going to be built right here. Yeah.
So talking about these like specific measures and specific construction methods, and you know, Charlie just mentioned batteries, right? We're you know, on the subject of microgrids. You know, there are obviously plenty of things to think about when making a building resilient, whether it's, you know, passive design strategies, daylighting, natural ventilation, solar. But in terms of microgrids, I think just to hit on this topic for anybody listening who might just be asking, what is a microgrid and how is that going to make my building, my home, my campus, my industrial facility, how is it going to make that more resilient?
Well, I think if you ask 10 people about what is microgrid, you're going to get 10 different answers. Right? Like everyone has their own little bit of a definition. And my definition, and we could have four definitions on this call right here, but you know, you have at least two distributed generating assets supplying one load, and that's as simple as it could be, right? At minimum of two supplying one load, so that could be solar plus battery, that could be a generator plus a battery, that could be cogen plus a battery, or saying plus a battery because batteries add a lot of value to a microgrid to store that energy in the case of a grid outage. So I think, you know, when people think about what's the value of a microgrid, you know, it's, you know, on the residential level, you could have solar plus a battery and power goes out, boom, you got power for a couple of days, all the way up to the corporate side of, well, the power goes out and you can keep the lights on or your product can keep, you know, especially manufacturing, your product doesn't fail, or if you're in food storage, all of a sudden your product doesn't spoil, right? There's a lot of value out there for having microgrids, and you know, there it will be the future because the grid is technology is adapting very fast to where it's cost effective to install it, and you can make a return on investment, and you can work with groups like Renew to make it, you know, no cash and actually reduce OPEX. So excited about microgrids, and I think everybody, you know, you'll hear people just call solar microgrids sometimes, and it's a little bit different than that, but they're not wrong, right? It is a source of energy supplying a load, and that's what they want to call it, sure, but I like to think of it as at least two sources of energy supplying one load.
Yeah, I think I completely agree. If you have generation and the ability to dispatch energy and the ability to dispatch energy to, you know, a connected or single user from that network, that's a microgrid, right? I think batteries are key to it, as you say, Mike, because in the context of replicating the grid, which is just, you know, large production facilities distributing out to a number of different users, here's a centralized production facility that's linked to a universe of users and has the ability to operate on its own to some extent, separate from the main grid. Basically, I just said what you said with different words. Yeah, that's the problem with microgrids.
Right. No, yeah. It's great. It's great to establish, you know, right. Just to establish what we're, you know, what we're talking about, what we're installing, right. What we're funding.
And why.
And right. It's right. And why? And it sounds like more and more of our future projects, right, where we've already been involved in a number, but more and more future projects will involve microgrids because of the resiliency. Yeah.
It's a really good point. I mean, I think we don't talk about any project now that's just efficiency. Almost none of our projects are just efficiency. We always say, look, we need to at least explore some on-site generation and some storage to give you to reduce your footprint and to give you that ride through capability. Yeah.
Yep. Got to reduce and then produce. As my old football coach said, if it rhymes, it's true. So that, there you go.
Well, that's the third time I've heard you use it this week. And I've never heard it before. I like it. I think it's becoming part of the Renew vocabulary. Reduce and then produce. Yeah. Yeah.
Reduce, then produce. So,
love it.
With that, let's get into the content everybody's waiting for, our beer rankings. How is everyone doing? How far have you got on your Allagash White?
I'm regretting that I didn't bring another one into the room with me.
Oh wow!
I'm saving this last sip for this review.
Yeah, I'm pretty well done. Oh, Mike, you've been very abstemious. You've got a lot of your beer left.
It's a skinny glass. I think that's it. But no, I'm bringing my A game. I'm told everyone at the beginning, this is our best pod yet. I didn't want to, you know, drink too fast. Didn't want to talk too much, just the right amount. So, it's definitely a good one.
I think you stuck the landing. So Alexandra, how would you rate this Allagash White?
Is this a scale of 1 out of 10?
1 to 10. Yep.
1 to 10. I'd say this is a 7 for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty mild and kind of as expected. You know, pretty stable, good beer for a Friday afternoon.
So it's no Silver Moon, but it's a good solid 7.
No, exactly. Yeah, there you go.
I would give it an 8. On flavor. It's got a lot of depth to it. I'm not usually a guy that would drink anything with orange peel and coriander in it, but you don't actually taste that stuff. It just gives it a little kick. And then they do have a really good sustainability program. They've got solar on the roof. They're a B Corp. They use a million pounds of local grain per year, which is pretty cool. They're supporting local farmers and reducing their carbon footprint. They side stream, as they say, almost all of their waste, and they support clean water programs in Maine. So I will give them the full point on the sustainability score. I think I give them an 8 with a kicker to the 9.
Alrighty, so that's Alexandra. That's one thing. So 7 on taste, you can add up to a point for sustainability. So based on what you're hearing, you could give them half a point. You could leave it at 7.
Yeah, I think the million pounds of local hops is pretty compelling, and seems like they got a good kind of circular economy going there. I'm going to have to give them a full point on that.
All righty. I'm recording it. I'm going to go for, sorry, Mike, I don't, I'm going to have you close this off here.
Okay.
Because I'm really interested in what your, in your opinions on beer in general. But I'll say this is, I'll give it a 7.5, a 7. I'll do it with the seven. It's really, mm-hmm. It's tasty. I do like coriander. It's one of my favorite spices. Add a full point for sustainability. 8. That's great. All right. So yeah, I'll go with an 8 as well. I have a crushability factor, but I'll let Mike take it from here.
Well, I was just going to add, I think we should add a function where we start reducing the scores for somebody who doesn't have any sustainability, right? You know, if you aren't posting it, let's start docking some points.
There
here.
You go.
Let's get
yeah.
There you go.
States are you know upping emissions regulations, so we're going to do the same on this podcast. Yeah.
So you can go down a full point if you're not talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. You've been notified. Yeah. So, in terms of, so flavor here, very light, digestible, delicious. I would give it a 7 on the crushability on the, but it would be higher, but there's a little, you know, just a little bit of coriander aftertaste. I'm sure it would get to me eventually.
It's just you're just holding the score down just for having the word coriander on the can, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, otherwise, great beer. It's a wonderful beer. Good time. I'm sure wonderful times here. So, yeah, I like it. I think we had this is like I said from the beginning. Yeah, this is our best one yet.
Nice. And
so wait, let me get this straight here. So crushability factor of 7. Do you have a taste score?
No.
All right. I'll put a, just for the record, I'll put a 6 next to your 7 for crushability. I think it's very crushable.
Well, remember,
we have
our scoring has been taste plus sustainability. Yeah. And Mike had his own factor for crushability, which was roughly, I thought, how many of these you'd sit down and drink in a row.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's,
so
that's
a 7 is far and away your highest crushability score yet.
That's the highest. That's definitely the most crushable.
I just wanted to confirm. That is a major crushability success. But on our old scale, taste plus sustainability, where would you put it?
Oh, yeah. If this was like 2021 or something, this would be like a 7.4. Plus the 1, you know.
Okay.
So it's.
I think we gotta ask you to go old school too, so we can keep our rankings.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah. Here. So
the numbers all add up.
Average of 8.35. There. All right. 8.35. That might.
I don't think that's gonna make the top five.
Yeah, that's not gonna make the top five, but still. A very respectable average by Allagash Brewing.
Not at the bottom.
From Portland.
Not at the bottom, I'm assuming. No.
Absolutely not.
So the top five remains the same.
Until next time.
Yeah.
All right.
Guys and ladies, we did a wonderful job here. I am just really happy about 2023 in green beers. We're going places. The rocket ship is taken off.
We're off the launching pad. Thank you, Alexander. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Thanks, everybody.
All righty. Till next time. Green Beers is brought to you by Renew Energy Partners, your partner in building decarbonization. Decarbonizing your building is good for the earth, and it's a smart business move, but it's complicated, and it can cost you a lot of money. Our goal is to decarbonize your building while saving you money, so all of those retrofits pay for themselves. Learn more at renewep.com.